What's up? Welcome to episode 40 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
And despite all the trigger warnings, we dig deep into the bench to bring back the most triggered guy in comicbook.com. Charlie Ridgely's here with us.
That can't be true. I feel like I always hear you guys yelling.
I mean, it is
here.
Very true. That we need a whole podcast true. to unravel this. But I don't say that in a bad way, because you're a passionate man. You like what you like.
I'm excited about stuff.
Exactly. And that's what we need on this podcast. The people love passionate people. So we've brought you on today because Charlie Ridgely is going to help us break down the new film, Men in Black International, which he saw and reviewed for us. We got a lot of other stuff to talk about, too. We've had some a big trailer drop in the form of a Stephen King movie trailer, the new one that's come out that we're going to talk about. We are going to talk about some TV updates that are coming for series that have been announced or some series that are going to be making a return that we're very excited about. And because we got to live up to the name of this show every so often, Matthew Aguilar is going to take us through what is big in comics this week.
What?
And there are some big things. So we got to get to all of that, and we're going to start at the top of the show by jumping into a little bit of horror, because we have some horror.
At some point, you need to get Joe Blackman to say horror to you, and
oh god, how does
he? Oh yeah, because it doesn't sound anything like the word horror at all. Horror. It's all one syllable.
I prefer horror because, But on the horror front, there is one king, and it is Mr. Stephen King. And we are getting a sequel to one of his most iconic and famous stories ever, The Shining. I don't know how well people keep up with Stephen King stuff, but there was a book sequel released to The Shining that Stephen King released a few years back, and it was called Dr. Sleep. And now Dr. Sleep is a movie. And that movie stars Ewan McGregor as the grown-up version of Danny Torrance, the little boy from The Shining who had The Shining. And today we got a first look at what this movie is going to be like. And it's safe to say it's kind of a very different... If you're expecting, like, The Shining Part 2, it's not quite that at all. But it is interesting in the sense that this movie, since the trailer has come out, there's been a lot of chatter. And this movie essentially functions as... both an adaptation of King's Dr. Sleep novel, which was a sequel to his Shining novel, which was a very different thing than the movie that Stanley Kubrick made adapting Stephen King's Shining book, which famously they didn't see eye to eye about the Shining film adaptation. But Dr. Sleep, the movie, is apparently going to straddle the line and be both an adaptation of King's kind of pure Shining world source material and function as a sequel to the Kubrick version of the film, which is something that is made very clear in this first trailer from a lot of the visual cues that they actually, director Mike Flanagan, who you know from like Oculus or more recently The Haunting of Hill House, is doing this film. And he had a lot of recreations of the Overlook Hotel from The Shining, from Kubrick's version of The Shining. A lot of the imagery that is so famous from that film is recreated here. We got some musical, we got musical cues. I think that's your word for musical cues, but we had musical cues. And like, so yeah, so this is going to be an interesting thing. And it basically, the premise is that Ewan McGregor is grown up Danny. He's kind of had all the traumas and problems that go with his gift of The Shining, plus all of his experiences, especially like the Overlook Hotel. And he kind of comes in contact with a young girl who has the most powerful kind of version of The Shining, of these psychic powers that he's seen yet. But the twist is there's also this roving band of like what look like essentially gypsy kind of Shining vampire.
Yeah, they're creepy.
People led by Rebecca Ferguson, who basically find people with The Shining and feed on their powers. And, of course, now this girl's looking like a real great snack, and it's kind of up to Danny to protect her, but he's a damaged hero. So, and that's kind of what we get. And it was an interesting trailer. I think the first trailer plays on, like, what Mike Flanagan's strength is, which is this kind of line between supernatural and psychological horror, which is what he's very good at. Oculus was very much his breakout film, which he made out of one of his short films, is very much about that. And, of course, Haunting of Hill House was very much about that. It was a mix of kind of like families and psychological drama and supernatural horror. So we get that kind of taste of what that's going to be like in this trailer. There's a lot of shots of like Danny having a conversation with some entity or whatever this wall is. There's a lot of weird Stephen King things in here. Like he has like a message board going with a wall of that may or may not be a supernatural presence that says stuff to him. And then, you know, the red rum comes back from The Shining and all that. And so, it's very, very interesting. A very interesting first trailer. A lot of great imagery. We're going to get you guys' thoughts. But my whole thing from takeaway from this is like, if people are really expecting to jump in back into The Shining, like this is going to be a little bit jarring for those types.
Yeah.
Like you kind of got to go into this with the open mind of getting something truly new that just kind of has this connective thread to The Shining. So like almost like Castle Rock in a way or something like that.
I mean, that's kind of how I felt watching the trailer because I think, and it's weird too, I actually prefer the first half of the trailer to the second half, but you could say the second half is more homages the movie more in the second half.
Yeah.
The music flows and some of the imagery. So that's the one I expected to like, but I actually liked the first half better just because I thought that was just a better trailer. I thought that stuff was more interesting. And then once we start getting into the typical things you would expect, it kind of was like, meh. Like it's so it's weird. So I'm actually looking forward to it for the new stuff as opposed to just returning back to that world. I mean, that's definitely what I'll check out.
And see, I feel almost the complete opposite of what you're saying, Kobe, because I didn't expect this to tie into Kubrick's Shining at all. I didn't pay a ton of attention to like the pre-production and like kind of like the making of this movie as it was going along. But I assumed, because it was an adaptation of Stephen King's book, that it would have nothing to do with Kubrick's version of The Shining. It would just be kind of a standalone movie about the events of Danny Torrance long after The Shining. It might explain some things, and obviously watching The Shining helped. But, you know, King famously does not like what happened in Kubrick's Shining. And so then to see the imagery and like the actual recreated scenes from the original movie in this was crazy because I didn't expect
because
it at
Stephen
all.
Stephen King likes money.
He does right. like money.
At some point, I guess he has
but,
to.
You know, I was really surprised to see that, and I was really glad to see that. And I love how they've kind of turned it and taken the story and kind of molded it to the original while still making it an original from Stephen King. And like the fact that Stephen King had to give his permission before they did it. It's a really unique situation that I didn't expect to see or to kind of find myself in going.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be getting used to the changes. I mean, it is making some big changes to his source material. And he understands, like, the success of these things on a mainstream movie level is going to be much different, and he can't hold on to this. But it also seems like he's had to acknowledge in the time that, you know, despite his best efforts to, like, put out that crap miniseries, like, in the 90s or whatever.
Yeah, of The Shining.
Of The Shining,
This is the accepted.
Yeah, the Kubrick version is the version.
Yeah,
and, like,
right.
Not only that, but, like, one of the best known Stephen King horror pieces of horror.
I mean, it's probably it's one of the pinnacle, like most well-known horror films, period. And so it's got to be one of, if not his top, like talked about known adaptation. So.
Could this movie swing the tide back and give Stephen King adaptations a winning percentage? Or do we think?
I mean, I think that's already happened.
Has it? Outside of it.
I mean, are you talking about Castle Rock? I just mean critical
acclaim. Castle Rock was very middle of the road. There were a lot of people who hated it. I liked it.
Yeah.
But I think like the only like true wins that Stephen King has gotten is it, both the old one and the new one, and The Shining.
Well, I mean, but then
Pet Sematary is a cult favorite, but it wasn't.
He had a string of cult hits in the '80s and '90s. All those movies, The Langoliers, Sleepwalkers. I mean, even things like Lawnmower Man, like, all that stuff. I mean, he had a running, as low-budget horror, like, he was doing all right. I mean, big blockbuster horror hits, so far it's still It. Pet Sematary was
Carrie
kind of lukewarm.
Carrie's not a blockbuster, but Carrie is one of the pinnacle.
Yeah,
everyone's
Carrie's
about
a very iconic one. Cujo, I mean, so, I mean, for New Age horror, I mean, like, It has been it. Carrie, the remake, didn't do so well. Pet Sematary remake was kind of lukewarm, but I think that had a lot to do with the fact that Pet Sematary is just a weird story to try to adapt. Hollywood keeps thinking it's a good idea because of the premise, like people coming back from the dead, but it's actually a very weird story, and I think we talked about this when we reviewed it. Like, this was a good Pet Sematary. The production was there. Yeah. The horror was there. Mm-hmm. All that's there. It's just still you watch it, and you're like, man, this is freaking weird.
Yeah.
Like,
but that's the other thing, is you look at, like, okay, Dr. Sleep could initiate this, like, critical wave, but the Stephen King wave is already, like, we are so far into it because of what it did, because it, I think, was that catalyst to do so many things. We don't know if they're going to be good or bad, but, I mean, I almost once a month, maybe, we write up something about how a new King work is being adapted to TV or to film. And so in the next 5 years, we're going to have, I mean, dozens upon dozens of Stephen King adaptations.
What, the Dark Tower thing is still coming.
Yeah.
Stand is in the
Stand
works.
Stand is still in the
I mean,
work.
And then every like novella he's done that has been like lesser known is going, like, already has a thing because they want Stephen King's name.
I mean, the work has already been done. Hollywood already thinks Stephen King is like a hot brand again. Mm-hmm. So, like,
yeah.
I mean, he's going to keep collecting his money. But I think Dr. Sleep is smart to go with the Kubrick ties because that's going to attract
the
whole...
Have any of you guys read the book? Did you read the book?
Of The Shining?
Dr. Sleep is
Shining. No, Dr. Sleep.
I've read Dr. Sleep.
Dr. Sleep is actually, it's great. So that's why I'm super excited for
it. I hate Stephen King, so no.
I mean, I like Stephen King. I've heard really mixed things about Dr. Sleep from big Shining fans. Like, mm-hmm. I know people are kind of like, some people really love it and some people kind of like fell off on it. But I think it's to be expected almost any time you have something so beloved like The Shining and a sequel comes in all that time later. Like, it's rare that you're going to get something.
He didn't
that
ruin it.
So
I mean,
well.
He didn't ruin it. So, like, there is potential here. Yeah, so, right. Yeah, I think it's going to be the things that'll draw people in will be the kind of the ties to Kubrick's film. But I think there is enough substance to the book, and I trust people like Rebecca Ferguson.
Oh yeah,
and dude from the Native American dude from Westworld, who plays like her henchman. Yeah, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's in it. He's her henchman. And that whole kind of, I think they have good enough villains in this to really kind of make it interesting.
The little girl from Hill House is in there too, and she's really talented.
Yeah, so, I mean, they got a lot of talent going into this. And Mike Flanagan is like one of the three kind of horror directors that came up with like Andy Muschietti and David F. Sanders. They all kind of jumped from making these indies that they made. Andy Muschietti made Mama. David F. Sanders made Lights Out, and Mike Flanagan made Oculus in these shorts that became successful big-budget horror films. And I trust him to make this jump. I mean, Hill House was really good.
I mean, Flanagan did, just like David F. Sandberg did, like, jumped and did a sequel to a Blumhouse movie that was way better than the original.
Yeah.
Sandberg did Annabelle Comes Home, or not Comes Home, Annabelle Creation.
And then Flanagan did Ouija Origin of Evil.
Which was way better than the first one.
Yeah, we were
one.
Just talking about Ouija Origin of Evil because we were talking about the Magic 8-Ball movie that's coming out. And I was saying, like, Ouija Origin of Evil is, like, the only one of those toy-based horror games.
It really
works. Toy-based horror movies that actually
enjoyable. And a lot of that had to do
enjoyable.
With Flanagan.
Yeah, Flanagan and little Lulu Wilson, who was also in Annabelle and Ouija 2. So, like, yeah. So I trust this guy. And I trust there's enough rich material in King's book to make it interesting and enough kind of his knowledge of the Kubrick film to really kind of make that connection solid. So I'm kind of optimistic about this one.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a little wild that it's coming, like, what, 2 months after It, Chapter 2?
Yeah.
Like, right in that window, we're getting both of these movies back-to-back, and it's...
We're going to have... Garden
which either working out really well for
Stephen
it.
King set oversaturation.
Like, or people will compare it to It.
If It does really well, that's really good news for Dr. Sleep, which I don't think that it's going to do poorly at the
moment. No, I don't see it doing poorly either. So, all right, moving right along, we're going to move over into the kind of animated/anime side to talk about the first of three TV show announcements that were kind of notable, that kind of stuck out to us this week, and that is that The Boondocks is coming back. We talked about this a couple weeks ago because it was kind of
breaking. You've been on that Boondocks beat?
Yeah, we were on that Boondocks beat. I'm always on that Boondocks beat. But we got word from John Witherspoon, who starred Friday and is the voice of Grandpa in The Boondocks, that it was coming back. He was just kind of offhandedly making a remark while talking to Joe Rogan. And everybody scrambled. We're like, well, what the hell does that mean? Like, you know, and everybody was going into it. Are we finally getting Boondocks season 5? We talked to the producers here at comicbook.com because they have a new show called Sugar and Toys out. And we asked Carl Jones and Brian Ash, and they gave us a kind of non-answer that kind of showed that, yeah, they were involved in something with the Boondocks, but they wouldn't say anything specific. Now, this week, we are getting the official information that the series isn't going to season 5. It is getting a full kind of quote unquote reimagining or reboot launch, and that series creator Aaron Magruder is back and he's involved into helping to bring this back. He stepped out of season 4 of the show, which they've just produced without him, and it was obviously like the most hated and well deserved for the hate, like because, lackluster yeah. season of the show.
Someone that important.
Yeah,
leaves and it's
yeah very somebody hard. Who's has you know who is the DNA of this entire thing just like leaves, but it is time and Magruder hasn't this isn't just on the TV side. Magruder, if you haven't been paying attention, has been. It's funny because he's like not down. You could tell he's so not down with like social media. So he's been like dropping new Boondocks cartoons through like famous people's
just keeps
accounts,
handing it to people.
Yeah. Like Charlemagne the God, radio personality, Charlemagne, like he's been giving him like, hey, here's a new strip. And Charlemagne puts it out on his Instagram. But if you look at the hashtag Boondocks back, you can find a lot of these strips. And it's Magruder basically reacting to modern times in the era that we're in. We're in such a different place now. It's funny because the Boondocks started as like the cartoon. I mean, the strip has been around forever, but the cartoon really caught on as kind of skewering the Bush era and a lot of stuff that was going on in pop culture during the Bush era. It didn't pull any punches when it got into the Obama era. And
then it went away.
Yeah.
Before
Trump.
This.
Yeah. Before Trump happened, the Boondocks went away and it's been quiet on that front. And now Magruder's back and he has plenty to say about everything from, you know, Donald Trump and the realities of his presidency to the Mueller report and all that to everything with the controversies that were kind of like Me Too and Time's Up and things going on with like pop culture figures like the R. Kelly and Michael Jackson debates about who these men were and what do we do with their music. There's a hilarious one where Grandpa's like turning off the R. Kelly songs, like, I'm not listening to this anymore. He's like, I'm going back to good music, and he turns up Thriller, and he's like dancing again and like cheering, which is its own like little social commentary. So all of this is on the table, and you know it's going to be back, and I am so hyped because I think these days and times need the Boondocks. So I'm
perfect
hyped
for
this.
It's like any time when, like during the off season, when, you know, like Last Week Tonight or even like SNL go off air for a couple months and all this stuff happens and you're like, dude, I wish it was still here so I could see what they're going to say about that.
Bill Maher always has to deal with that. Like every time he goes off for a season, he's like, he does like a fake headlines of things I think will happen by the time.
And like, this is like perfect. Like we've been, oh my God, this would be amazing. An amazing to see what they say about that climate. And so, yeah, I'm down.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't read our interview with Carl Jones and Brian Ash, because they give us one of the funniest answers is I just asked them, like, would Riley Freeman be down with Donald Trump? And their answer is hilarious and spot on for, like, how Riley Freeman would react to Donald Trump in, like, being president. And it's just, in like, it just makes me want this so bad. Yeah. So, like, yeah, Charlie?
I mean, I'm not as big of a fan as you are, I think, because I was a little bit younger. When it was going on and I wasn't paying attention to it, but I've watched episodes here and there and I always loved how it could be so politically driven and also really hilarious. Like that was, other than South Park, one of the first, the only times I saw that. And I think today's age is so great for that, to have a counter to South Park, not to be in opposition to it, but to kind of work as a compliment and to have a very different perspective than the guys that make South Park have.
Yeah,
to come at it with a much broader, more down to earth like approach to making fun of what's happening in our world. And I think that there has not been a better time to have a show like the Boondocks than there is now.
Yeah, I think it's nice to have some nuance that Boondocks
has
that South Park, which I love South Park's riffing on stuff. But yeah, sometimes there is a little bit of a subtlety that's missing.
Yeah, the Boondocks kind of has a voice where South Park is just like, and the South Park guys are kind of going through this right now, this depression, because they feel like, oh, we've been like totally nihilistic or something like that.
Yeah.
And now that hasn't worked out for society, whereas the Boondocks is a little bit more
just a little
in its social commentary and stuff. So yeah, so we're all hyped. Moving on to something we might not be as hyped for. We're hearing that a Fast and Furious animated series is getting made. Fast and Furious Spy Racers, like, yeah.
That's so gross. I kept writing Speed Racers when I was like writing the articles, but it in my mind wouldn't register, like, no, it's actually
Spy
called Spy
Racers.
Yeah, man.
Oh my God.
Looking through this trailer again right now, like, yeah.
It's not great.
They don't, I mean, yeah.
I mean, it's not even not great. It's so forgettable. It's literally,
Netflix, who cares?
So Netflix is getting in on the Fast and Furious franchise with Spy Racers, and this trailer doesn't tell us anything.
No.
Like, it's just two souped-up cars racing through, like, the aqueducts of Los Angeles, and it doesn't tell us anything about, like, what spying would be involved.
Also, the style's so boring.
I mean, it's the exact same style. It's the same thing they're doing with DreamWorks Animation, that is big partnership. They're doing the same thing with Jurassic World. Make a Jurassic World spin-off series that's animated, it's gonna be on Netflix, that's geared more toward, you know, young teenagers. It's, and just, that's exactly what we're doing with Fast and Furious. And it's just
the fact that it's missing style. Now, I do like
teenage character Tony Toretto.
I do like that they're linking it somewhat.
Younger cousin of Vin Diesel's Dominic Toretto.
Matt, it's the same story.
I know. I did. Look,
literally,
I'm
he's going
to
say, Tony, Dominic Toretto's my cousin. And that's the only thing you're going to see. And then he's going to get roped into a government situation. Yep. The synopsis says he's going to get roped in to a government agency that wants him to infiltrate race car drivers. It's like he has the Toretto name, but he's playing the Brian character. And that's
I'm not saying he's going to be good.
No, I mean, that is a perfect thing. It is like, let's just lump Brian and Dom into one character.
One character.
Yeah.
I know. I'm disappointed. Like, I was, when we first. Like, when I saw the headline, I was like, oh, yeah, that could be great. And then I watched it and read the
Why would you think that could be great?
I don't know. Maybe. You don't know?
I mean, just...
I love the Fast and Furious franchise.
I mean, as I wrote in the show notes for this, like, this thing has become a damn cartoon anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, you
I mean,
give
me...
some kind of cool action thing.
Give me Hobbs.
It's a total satire of the franchise, and you're making a show that's, like, it's funny and, like... self-aware about what's happening in the franchise. That's awesome.
Doing what they do in the films in more believable fashion because it's animation.
Give me the cast of the movies, have them voicing their characters, do ridiculous stuff, and have it in a fun, energetic visual style, and I'd watch that.
Yeah.
But that has none of the personality.
But that
I won't.
And the thing is that we're reading into this because it's our jobs, but no one's going to do that. It's on Netflix, so it's free to most people. You're going to, Fast and Furious. My kid likes that, and then Netflix makes money.
Yeah.
Instantly.
Yeah.
And they spend almost nothing
on it.
We
know the business side of this. It's that's what we're saying
ridiculous.
Is gross. Like, we know the business side
it's
of this.
It's just a bummer.
It's like your franchise is stalling a little bit. What do you do? You animate,
They have like a spinoff series for every DreamWorks franchise on Netflix.
Yeah.
Like,
Trolls,
you know,
like,
Trolls,
yeah.
How to Train Your Dragon, Puss in Boots, Boss Baby. Has a like four
well,
different series on there
because that's a good series idea. Kung Fu Panda does like but that's a good idea. No, seriously, because the Boss Baby thing is like
I like the movie.
It's a sitcom scenario you can go back to over and over again.
I love the movie. The actual movie.
I mean, it makes sense with taking an animated property, making it look similar. They're just starting to now do it with live action properties the exact same way, and I think that's what's like. Oh wait, this is different, and it kind of. Changes things and makes you think more about like what are they actually doing.
I mean, they can do. I'm gonna try to. I always try to be even sided and say if I'm gonna go negative, also go positive, like on things. So the one thing I can say is like, yeah, in animation we could get some really sick action racing sequences. Like
I tried to go positive, but Charlie blew a hole in all my positive arguments.
So I hope
that's what I'm here for. That's why I'm here.
Great CGI, like animated action, like racing sequences. I mean, that's all I can think of. And they better get one hell of a kid to play this this
because he's gonna have to carry the
Tony Toretto. They better get one hell of a voice actor because he's gonna have his work cut out.
They're just gonna do the Baby Groot thing with Vin Diesel. He's gonna voice it. They're gonna just alter it in post.
Oh my!
Can I get Kevin Hart? I just saw him
voice
Snowball.
Stop!
I want Snowball in Fast and the Furious.
Stop.
What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?
You kind of want it now, don't you?
No, I don't.
Panda.
We're getting John Cena in Fast and Furious, and that's
Panda,
awesome.
Panda.
Good.
That's it. That's all I need.
Let's talk about something else that's coming to live action. So, Krypton is back for season 2. One of the dark horse hits of last year, in my opinion, Krypton. I didn't hear so much chatter about it, but it was like one of the better comic book TV shows to come out of the last few years, in my opinion. Just what they do with the Superman mythos and the kind of way they spun that. It has a great cast of actors that do really good jobs and, yeah, some good production values for this DC, live-action DC stuff. So season 2 is now back after a big kind of cliffhanger from season 1. And one of the biggest selling points for season 2 in all the trailers has been the fact that they're bringing in Lobo, DC's, you know, big bounty hunter. And now... Lobo's already kind of set up to get his own spinoff series over at Sci-Fi, which I'm kind of happy about, because I've been waiting for Lobo to do something in live action DC for a lot of years, since we've been reporting on this movie for like 10 years.
the Michael Bay Lobo
still
movie?
Still in development with Michael Bay. I don't know. But I think, you know, I always get nervous, especially now, right now, on something like sci-fi, that they're putting the cart before the horse, because, like, let's get through like a couple episodes of Krypton. Let's let this Lobo character kind of gel. Let's let the actor who's playing him, Emmett Scanlon, who's from Constantine, like, let's let him get some fan cred, some street cred under him. And then you announce me in Lobo series, because I feel like this is almost like the opposite of Swamp Thing right now. Like, Swamp Thing got canceled right after I started getting into that, like, and it just got here. And it's like, Krypton just got here, now you're telling me to get signed up for Lobo. Well, Sci-Fi, you also took away Happy, and you also took away Deadly Class.
Sci-Fi takes away everything.
Yeah, it takes away everything. So, like, it's hard for me to even think this headline could last until this show actually premieres. Because
it's not like the CW where you have faith that they'll keep it around for a while. Because, like, Batwoman had that, right? We didn't even see her yet, and they're like, well, she's probably already getting her own series, and we're going to develop it. But we know they'll stick with something.
Yeah, well, it hasn't launched. Like, I'm already going to, like, I can guarantee it's going to run at least 4 seasons.
But sci-fi doesn't have that kind of cred.
Yeah,
no, and that's the problem around. Because they make great stuff.
Yes.
Like I mean, sci-fi freaks me out in the sense that, like, I feel like Krypton's going to run. If season two doesn't pick up, like, in 3 weeks, we're going to be hearing, so, Krypton's getting the axe. What about that Lobo? What?
Yeah.
What about that Lobo? What? I don't remember. Every single year,
I was looking through the shows, like the original shows from sci-fi, and I could count on 3 fingers, like, the ones that have made it past three and a half years on the air.
Yeah.
Like, Battlestar Galactica was on sci-fi. That's really only one of note. Like, every other great show that people have loved on sci-fi is gone. Magicians went for 4, right?
4, yeah.
4, I think. So that was one of the other ones. Maybe 5. Something I could be wrong about Magicians. Magicians was
one of the longer ones.
Got a life.
The Earp show?
But, like, Winona Earp is still in limbo after season 3 or season 2. And then you got, like, all the ones that people love went away. Deadly Class, Happy.
Did people love Deadly Class?
Channel Zero. I mean, people talked about Deadly Class. Channel Zero. The Expanse. The Expanse was, like, the most celebrated show they've ever had, critically. And then they axed that after 3 years, and the Amazon picked it up. It's everything on sci-fi I get excited about because they have great ideas. But
they
got to
divert that money to Sharknado.
It just goes away.
That's the franchise that keeps the channel.
Then make a Sharknado TV series.
I think made it to 4. Yeah.
Man, Sharknado keeps sci-fi going.
Made it to 4.
Okay. All right. So far we've named 3.
Yeah.
Like I said, 3 fingers.
And Sharknado.
Yeah.
Sharknado's a movie series.
Man.
Make a Sharknado TV series. I don't care.
So
Ian Ziering will do it. He needs stuff to do. Swamp Thing's canceled.
The other thing about this Lobo thing is it's hard for me to feel like sci-fi will be able to sustain this, because this feels like a series where you have to go to a lot of, like, unless there's something about the series that they're doing, like, where Lobo's just wandering around Earth the whole time, which sounds like Inhumans all over again. Like, it sounds like high production costs. Mm-hmm. Like, you need the makeup.
Krypton's
for aliens.
Got some pretty high production costs, though.
Yeah, and I don't think Krypton's going to be around the, 2 years
only,
from
like,
now.
Only two of those people need makeup, as
it's
opposed
not going to
putting your main character slathering him in makeup the whole time. Plus, he's got to go around to all these weird places in the universe and like alien bars.
He's basically
and stuff.
Just like rolled around in baby powder and with. Like,
I think Krypton has a shot.
But, like, Krypton has a shot if it moves somewhere else.
Yeah, and trying to create all these kinds of, like, aliens and alien locales that Lobo would have to be doing jobs in seems like way too high of a cost for this kind of show.
Just make him a bar owner. He just owns a bar.
Never leaves the bar.
Yeah,
like,
he never leaves the bar.
Everybody comes to him. That's his whole thing. I don't have to bounty on everybody. Everybody comes to me.
All the fight scenes are like the ending scene of Glass, and they're just out in the parking lot.
It's going to be like, on sci-fi, I feel like I'm scared that it'll be like Lobo spending a season wandering Earth looking for his bike. Like, get off of Earth.
And in, like, the finale, they're like, he finally gets to ride it.
And he, like, the last shot is him zooming towards the sky.
That one season of Smallville all over again.
Exactly.
You only get one doomsday punch.
I mean, I want to believe in this, and I want to believe we can get the violent, because I remember when they started making Lobo, like, adult-themed comics.
Yeah.
And they started being things I couldn't look at in comic store. They had to be on the top row with a paper over the front of them. Like, that's where I really got into that guy. And I was like, whoa, what? You know, stealing.
I like Lobo, looking. But I'm going to be honest. The biggest Lobo moment that sticks out in my head is when the DC Marvel series came out and he went up against Wolverine.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing.
He's the riff off of Wolverine.
Yeah. The best that's thing I purpose. Think of is, what's his name? Brad Garrett from, like, Everybody Loves Raymond, doing him in, like, the animated world and, like, in him and Superman, the animated series, yeah. Justice League. Like, those are my biggest, fondest memories of Lobo.
I can't think of Lobo without thinking of Roman Reigns because he looks just like him in every way. And, like, the hair and the facial hair. And, like, when I was writing freelance here, I wrote a thing about how Roman Reigns should be Lobo. And, like, that was one of the first big things I did. God. And I always, like, it always associates now. And I can't, like, see them apart.
Now every time I see Roman Reigns, I'm going to think.
You are Lobo. Welcome.
Bun up.
He's breaking into Hollywood now. This can be his Black Adam. We can see that movie in like 15 years. Man.
All right.
It'll be great.
We're still getting way ahead of ourselves. So to sum this all up, Lobo, we want to believe in you, but we also are practical bettors, so we don't just like throw our money on the roulette table haphazardly. So I don't have a lot of faith that this will make it and sustain it, but prove me wrong.
We will see a season.
Maybe. I don't know. If Krypton falls, like I don't see this actually getting continued, because what is it spinning off from?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So, all right, moving right along, we got to live up to the name of this show and talk about some comics.
Yeah.
So Matthew Aguilar is going to take us through what's hot in comics this week.
I'm going to roll through these pretty quick here. First, just a thing of note, you can actually see some of the behind, like the after credits of Absolute Carnage scenes. Those are starting to roll out every week in certain books, so just keep your eyes out for those, because that's all going to be kind of like the Wolverine ones.
There's also variant covers on them too this time, which is new.
Yeah, like, which is like the little Carnage.
Yeah,
like you actually see the
Venom
effect.
And symbiote Spider-Man.
Yeah,
some covers have just the plain white logo, and some have like a bit of Carnage symbiote attached to it, which is pretty cool.
It's pretty cool, especially if you're a variant hunter. I'm waiting for the die-cast cutout cover or something, because those are the ones I like. We also have Amazing Spider-Man 23, which Hunted ended in the last issue, but this is the epilogue. And in this one, actually, two pretty big things happen. By the way, spoilers going into this week's books, but they should be fine. No, you should have read it. So we've got a new Kraven. Because Kraven actually died again.
Yeah, you said that last time.
In the event. But his son now takes over, like, officially, and even, like, cuts his hair and wears the old costume. Like, he is now taking the spot of Kraven. But then we also get Chameleon returning as well. So if you haven't been reading the series, it looks like they are really, this event kind of matters going forward. So I would definitely try and catch up if you can. Major X number 5. Kofi's reaction to this news, by the way, I remember I said this in the office and your reaction was amazing. I can't when I said that they reveal who he is the son of, which is Cable and Storm. And I remember I said that and you were like, you just shook your head and like boo. Made a sound. It sounds
horrible. Sounds like some Rob Liefeld stuff.
Like, so
it's an X-Men thing. That is a thing that you just expect X-Men to do.
It's true.
No, not really.
Well, are you kidding me?
I mean, are we expecting X-Men to do bad things?
It's not the weirdest combination I've seen.
It's not a weird combination. It's just like, why?
Yeah, I mean, it just opens up. It gives me a headache because I know I have like 10 more years of storytelling about Cable and Storm now. Just gives me
is Storm not with Black Panther anymore? When did that happen?
For me, the only
some comics because Storm is all in Wakanda in the Shuri comic and stuff.
And even then, like I didn't buy it. It felt like that episode of South Park where they just tried to get like Token to get with the one black girl in school. Like it just didn't feel like natural. It's like, wouldn't it be great if this African character and his African character
Sorry, you mean like Michonne in the Walking Dead comic through the whole thing?
Yeah. And it basically, because to me, the purest Storm relationship is always going to be with Forge.
I do love.
Like, Storm and Forge Storm is, like, the best. Like, that stuff is awesome. That was, like, a real relationship
Now we know really why Kofi is.
Yeah, because he
Kofi shipped
Storm and Forge.
Yeah, heavily. I mean, because Chris Claremont, like, put a lot of work into making, like, these cool moments and stories and just, like, her making out with like Forge and making it rain and they're standing dead. Like that kind of stuff is like, it's awesome.
Forge gets no respect these days.
Forge does not get any respect.
And Forge needs to come back and kick some X-Men ass personally. He should be like the secret villain of like a major
story. So man, I will make sure to keep an eye out for when that like inevitable Forge number one comes out.
I just wanted
later.
To be like unmasked as like this awesome villain that everybody loves, and it turns out it's just Forge, the maker. That'd be like awesome. So
we also
moving right along from my hurt feelings.
We also have Detective Comics 1005, which is the finale to the Arkham Knight arc. And then we've also got Event Leviathan, which is kind of the next big DC event. It's kind of spinning out of Action Comics. It's Bendis.
Which I did not like.
You didn't like that?
No.
Oh man, I love Bendis on Batman.
I don't like that name. What is Event Leviathan?
Yeah, I can't even like. I when I get a comic, I should be able to tell you like, oh, this is what this comic's like. The character's going to be about.
Well, it's not really. It's in a like more an event miniseries spinning out of the stuff. That
Why'd
Bendis
you put Event in the title?
And
it's stupid.
Just I don't call like it Leviathan.
However, what I will say is
Event War of the Realms number one.
Well, no, but it's not. It's Event Leviathan is the name of the event that's happening in the books.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds bad.
That's but weird. I don't the like cool part about this is it focuses on like it's just Batman, Lois, Green Arrow, and then they tease the question.
The Green Arrow moment was a surprise.
Awesome. Yeah.
You're naming all the characters I don't that
but
I
those characters like Bendis writes them as a group really well. Like it'll have to win a lot of people over. So it's not the easiest book
in
to
Bendis
just jump
in. Bendis We Trust is what you're basically telling me.
This is the Bendis book. This I wanted a Bendis Batman book more than I ever wanted him on Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So I to see him write Batman is great for me.
My That's biggest issue was when it was a bit muddy. Like you
it
get
is.
That Alex Maleev mud.
It's a little I do
about
like
the artwork.
The artwork. Yeah. I do like to see Bendis with other artists, and I know he has like three he always wants to work with.
I love that. Like the stuff that they did on Daredevil was great. Stuff they did on Moon Knight, I thought it was a lot of fun. Spider-Woman was great. This just felt.
But Batman's already a dark character.
I know.
So when you put someone that is just all about shadows, it's just like, I can't see anything.
A mixed bag. All right.
Yeah,
moving on.
A mixed bag. And then last here, I have Prodigy number 6. I know I have just gone on about this book a couple times. I love this book, man. And it ends its arc. And it was awesome. It's just a fun Indiana Jones type adventure.
Is that the Mark Miller book?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it's just fun. So it ends here. This is like, you can actually read all the 6 issues, and it's just one adventure in a title.
All right.
So, yeah, that's it in comics.
Anything else?
No.
What is this Sonata thing you have?
Well, it wasn't that important.
You take Silver Surfer Blackout and you put that book in.
Silver Surfer Black's a great comic. Go read it.
I cut that one too, by the way. Thank you very much, because nothing really happened in it. And it's
true.
Yeah, it's kind
like you're trying to cut time, and Kofi was like, no, no, no.
I know.
You wrote something. Make sure you own it.
I kind of keep it honest with the people.
I'm trying to keep it honest with the people. But then you call me out
in the show notes. You can't hide in these shoes.
Jesus.
All right. I know you have reason to leave after that, but stay tuned, because when we come back, we are going to talk about the 2 new films dropping in theaters this week, Shaft and Men in Black International.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right. So I'm going to take Shaft first, because they sent me out to see this. I don't know why they sent me, but like, I'm just kidding. I went out to see it because I love Shaft. Because Shaft's a bad mother. Shut your mouth. And Shaft is one of those characters that got me into blaxploitation.
People who listen to this have no idea, Kofi.
I know. That's the kind of joy of it. I know who I am, Jim. Thank you. Basically, like, it got me into blaxploitation films when I was like a very impressionable age as a teenager. And Shaft and Superfly were like the 2 that, of course, I jumped into before like the Mac and a bunch of other stuff. But Shaft was always like the cool black James Bond for us, who, if you didn't, I mean, I also watched James Bond, but it was cool to have a black James Bond. They even make a really great joke about that in this movie.
They make it in the trailers too.
Yeah. So basically, I'm sure if you've seen the Shaft trailers, you've seen the joke about, you know, Samuel L. Jackson saying, if that dude James Bond was real, he would think he was me. So Shaft is basically, at this point, with this installment from Tim Story, who did Barbershop and Fantastic Four, the original movies and all that stuff, this Shaft just kind of doesn't take itself seriously. It's kind of like a self-parody. in the sense that it's a comedy movie, mostly almost it's an action comedy, but mostly heavily on the comedy. And it's about Samuel L. Jackson Shaft, who was introduced in the 2001 as the nephew of Richard Roundtree, the original Shaft. So this one is even like 19 years later. He had a kid with Regina Hall, who he became estranged from, which is the whole point of the story about how he kind of got estranged from his kid and his family. But when something happens to the younger Shaft, one of his friends, he realizes he's in the middle of a case in Harlem and in New York trying to investigate that he, because he grew up, his mom didn't want him to be like his dad. So he's more, he becomes an FBI data analyst, and he's kind of a nerd, millennial. He has like a lemon tower in his kitchen and stuff, which is like a whole gag and conversation in the movie. But he's just kind of the opposite of old school Shaft. And so he has to go and kind of make contact with his dad, and they got to hook up and become this odd pair buddy cop thing going on and try to solve this case. And like I said, what's great about Shaft is that it doesn't take itself seriously. It's self-parody. It's just basically an excuse for Samuel L. Jackson to get back into a character he can just kind of walk into and riff on how much he hates like millennial kids and stuff like that. Is basically what
it's Samuel L. Jackson's Get Off My Lawn movie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
exactly what it sounds like.
Except they make it really funny and enjoyable. Yeah. And the kid who plays his son, I'm blanking
Brandon,
on his
Brandon T. Usher.
Yeah, Brandon T. Usher is really good about kind of knowing his role and being this kind of new age dude, but not like being a stereotype. Like he's not just a complete, you know, coward and stuff. Like he, part of the movie is just him realizing just how much Shaft, you know, pun intended, is in him, like, and kind of finding his own. Yes, I'm not saying that pun intended is a nasty joke on the podcast, Charlie. This is a joke that's made over and over again in the movie.
Oh, I believe it 100%. Yeah. It's on the poster, isn't it? Like,
yeah, I mean, that's like the whole thing, as I say, is like, you know, there's a club scene where old Shaft takes young Shaft out, and he's like, this is my son, and Junior, and you're like, and the two girls' instant response is, nothing Junior about this Shaft. Like, that's, this is what this movie is. So you have to understand going in, like, when I say this is self-parody and, like, a comedy, I mean it. Like,
all the
way.
It is
just every lowbrow Shaft penis joke you can think of, sex joke, you know, oh, man, there's a thing with, like, they do something really gross with just like Samuel L. Jackson's beard being covered in glitter and a female character. Like it's just like that. Wow. And it's really enjoyable. It's very pulpy, kind of, you know, pulpy crime noir spoof comedy. And it really works. It's very enjoyable just to see, you know, Brandon T. Usher, Samuel Jackson, and eventually Richard Roundtree also get in on the action. And thankfully, they do away with one of the dumbest things from the series, which is they just finally say, like, Richard Roundtree, he was like, there's like a line where he's talking to Samuel Jackson, and he's like, yeah, you know, yeah, he pops up to something or something. He's like, well, now that you're not pretending to be my uncle anymore or something like that. Like,
which is still so crazy to me, because, like, you look at those two characters, they play father and son. Richard Roundtree looks super old. He's out of shape. He's got, like, a gray hair and gray beard. And Samuel Jackson's, like, the action star of the movie. They're, like, 6 years apart in age.
Oh, well, yeah. Samuel L. Jackson, I will say, it's there are so some shots crazy where you can tell Samuel Jackson is still trying to wear, like, tight pants and leather in this.
Yeah.
And he's definitely looking a little bit older.
Yeah, but he looks great for, like, 70.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It blows my mind.
Yeah, but it just, it is funny. And the three of them, the final action sequence is great with the three of them. The ladies are great in it, too. Regina Hall is in it, and she's from Scary Movies. She's really hilarious, playing Brandon T. Usher's mother. And Alexandra Shipp, who plays Storm in the X-Men movies, is in this. And she's kind of like Brandon T. Usher's friend and love interest. And she's really great in this. And they do a lot of things with the female characters to make them, you know, to kind of reflect new age and how they don't, like, take crap anymore. Like, and it's just kind of, it's really good. So it's a fun time if you're, like, a Shaft fan and you love the old ones. And you, especially if you love the 2001, you're going to like this one. So check that out.
I'm still waiting for the Michael Cera Shaft movie.
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
Phil Twitter wants it to happen. So, moving right along, we're going to finish up today with our breakdown and review of Men in Black International. Charlie and I saw this movie, but Charlie stepped in and reviewed it for us, so I'm going to let him go out on this hill first and take the initial gunfire.
I don't know if it's like... It's not very good. I'll just go out and say it up front. Like, it's a new version of Men in Black. You know, you have Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth taking over for Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, and they're kind of taking the adventure to different places all over the world. They're kind of starting in London. There's this mystery, and they kind of go around the globe trying to find this weapon and trying to uncover this secret in the Men in Black London organization. And is directed by F. Gary Gray, who, you know, I love Barry Sonnenfeld for his work that he directed the first three Men in Black movies. But like F. Gary Gray is a fantastic director. And I will always like, okay, of course, F. Gary Gray is a better filmmaker. And there's a lot to get excited about going into that. Kumail Nanjiani is the voice of the main alien Bonnie. Character. It's great. There's so many things to love about this, but none of them really work out, which is really, really disappointing. Yeah, Hemsworth and Thompson are great together in Thor and in Avengers, and they're good together here, and they both give good performances, but the characters are like completely hollow and really boring. They don't have, at the beginning, Tessa Thompson's character is really interesting, and then they just kind of like go away from it to make some like love story jokes that don't ever really land. Kumail Nanjiani remains funny the whole time. Pawnee is like the best part of the movie. But Kofi and I talked a lot after the movie about why this movie didn't work. Part of it is not having Will Smith, like, the ability to have somebody who can be completely bewildered and lost, but also so confident and exciting at the same time. You know, Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth, each of their characters were like a half of what, if you put their characters together, you got Will Smith's character, Agent J. And the bigger thing was moving it around the globe. Like, so much was lost in that. There's so much charm in the original Men in Black because it's in New York City and there's an alien working, you know, the tabloid newsstand, and like there are people under the subways and things that we all know and are used to seeing became extraordinary. There's a whole world underneath the streets and underneath what we thought we knew. Yeah. And that made it so charming and fun. The simplicity of that.
Yeah, the whole thing about that, just taking the baton, is like, that's what makes MIB work as the characters and the movies themselves. They're a secret organization that hides in plain kind of sight. They're just dudes in suits that look like every other dude in suits. And the world that we think we know, like you said, isn't the world we know because there's this whole other world of alien, you know, human harmony living going on right in front of us every day. And that was kind of the whole hook of that series and what made it great and made it feel like something as fantastical as aliens everywhere were very grounded because the aliens were like in New York at these familiar locales, and they themselves became kind of like New Yorkers.
And when they weren't like big spectacles, like one was just a talking dog. The most memorable alien from the whole franchise is a Frank the Pug, you know? And then no matter what they do, you know, no matter how long Jay's been in the organization, Will Smith can still act surprised by the things he finds.
Yeah.
And that kind of pairing together and the grumpy Tommy Lee Jones, like, it just worked really well. And this didn't have any of those
things. It's weird because I feel like this movie is one that somehow manages to not be the sum of all of its parts, even though all the parts are good.
Right.
Like, F. Gary Gray is arguably a better director for a blockbuster than Barry Sonnenfeld is.
Right.
You have Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth, who are both, like, red hot and at the top of their game in terms of, like, comedic stuff, and have a relationship with each other and chemistry with each other to be able to riff with each other and kind of act with one another after Thor. And you would think, you know, bigger budget, bigger scope, like, there would be more interesting ideas at work in here, and it's just not.
It was void of interesting things.
I'm supposed to be impressed by a thing, a set, like a little location tag that says Marrakesh, and even though something just boring and generic happens, like a generic chase scene, and not notice because look at this exotic locale, aliens, and like, and aren't you amazed? And it's like, no, not really.
It's like nothing ever felt real.
Yeah.
Like even in the streets of London, at the very beginning of the movie, there's these aliens come to take the weapon from the alien that they're working with. And there's like this shootout in this empty street in London. And
it feels like a set piece.
It looks like a set piece. It's like, this doesn't feel real, even though it's in a real place.
It's like somebody put fabricated. That debris up there really nicely. Like the way the glue is holding. Like,
Everything in New York felt true, like, to New York.
Yeah. And it felt like Universal Studios. It felt like you were at Universal Studios, like on a Men in Black ride, basically.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it should be. I wish they had just taken more time to focus on one location, call it Men in Black International, just keep it in London and just like, explore. And London's such an interesting city with all of its history and all the things that are physically in that city. Like, explore catacombs or things like that, or other things that are like all aliened out. And I think the biggest crime is at least Sonnenfeld has a lot of imagination. He packed like every shot with stuff. If you weren't watching the main Men in Black stuff, you could look around a shot and see cool little Easter eggs of like aliens doing this, that, or the other, or designs. And this is kind of like bereft of all of that. It's just so every shot is not interesting. They don't like fit little cool things in there. and it's just kind of ultimately boring. It's disappointing. And they try to throw like three twists at you, and they're like all so painfully predictable that when they start to get set up in the very beginning of the movie, you're like, so that's a twist. It's coming back later, and sure enough, and it's just all predictable.
Yeah, it's there are fun things to there are fun moments to be had. I mean, Pawnee, like I said, is really funny. There's some cool good fight scenes from F. Gary Gray. He directed a couple fight scenes really well, but
yeah,
it's pretty forgettable.
Yeah, I mean, if you wait for this one on home video or on HBO, you're not wrong in your thinking. I don't think the franchise is dead. I will say that. I feel like this is the Fast and Furious of the Men in Black franchise.
The fourth movie.
Yeah, the fourth movie in the sense that it's kind of like a reboot, and the reboot itself is not very interesting, but it does open the door to possibly more interesting things.
If they can somehow get Will Smith to agree to do one, and you have these new characters with Will Smith and potentially with Tommy Lee Jones, you've got something really great with the talent that's on the screen.
Yeah, if he were to come back you've and do one, because it's not a spoiler to say where it sets up, it sets them up so that, you know, the New York Men in Black, the London Men in Black, all that connection is still going to be there. And like, if you threw Will Smith back into the next one, like, you would give this a shot of fuel that it needs. So it's not dead because, like I said, the parts are all good. But just somehow the sum of them is just not.
Yeah, I would just clarify, creatively, it is not dead.
No.
Financially, we don't know yet.
Yeah,
the international in the title really is telling of what the box office is going to be.
Yeah, what kind of money.
The international market's going to have to save this one, I think.
So I think we can wrap it up. We won't beat up on Men in Black too hard. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward case. But you can read Charlie's full review on comicbook.com or watch it. By the time you hear this, it'll be up. So, choose wisely this weekend, going to the theater, my droogies. All right, so, moving right along. If you are just getting into this Comic Book Nation journey, we put up new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com. We have an RSS feed there. You can subscribe to the show. You can subscribe on a bunch of your favorite listening platforms, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Playlists, Google Podcast, and you can tell any Amazon Alexa device to play Comic Book Nation podcast, and we'll fire up for you. We also appreciate you guys leaving some good reviews on these venues. If we find 5-star reviews from you, we read them on the show periodically, and we send you some comic book swag. And I am happy to announce, as Jim Viscardi holds it up proudly, boom, we now have official Comic Book Nation t-shirts.
Boom!
Not just comicbook.com t-shirts, but Comic Book Nation t-shirts, so that you guys, you true fans, can go out there and represent in the fully correct way for the show.
Look at that pretty logo.
And to kind of kick off this milestone, we're going to read a couple reviews and send some people some of these nice new t-shirts. So we're going to read one called Worth It from Jeremy from AR. And Jeremy said, I went on a cruise and mostly watched Cartoon Network the entire time. I'm 31 years old. Good detail. Because it was the best thing on. Thank you, Adult Swim. I found this podcast trying to research who the 16th Titan would be. Because the network spammed it. I really like the host and, of course, love the movie series they talk about. I feel like I gained useful information listening and added it to my list of 21 other podcasts I keep up with each week. My job is easy, so I just listen all day. Thanks. No, thank you, Jeremy, very much. And if you hear this, let us know. Hit us up so we can get you a comic book t-shirt.
For realsies.
Come for the Nerds, Stay for the Nerds by Kenny Plus Music. It's awesome to have a condensed spot for all my fandoms to be discussed. Between this and a wild podcast has appeared, I'm up to date each week on everything happening in my nerd life. Thanks for being my go-to source. That's a shout-out to our sister podcast, A Wild Podcast Has Appeared, which is a Pokemon podcast. So if you're a Pokemon fan, be sure you are also subscribing to that one, because as you can see, it's getting some love. And Awesome PC by A. Herbert. I think that means podcast. Yes, podcast. Awesome podcast.
Makes
by
sense.
By A. Yeah. Herbert. Love this show. The Outlaw brings amazing insight and perspective. Clean and fun. Give it a listen.
Outlaw. Are you the outlaw now? Is that what we have to call you?
I don't claim to be. I don't know. I'm just a guy. I'm just
no,
a guy
my father
who
is the outlaw.
Podcast. So, those are three reviews we like to thank you for. If you guys want to continue the conversation with us, hit us up at the hashtag ComicBookNation. And also, if you heard your review read, hit us up there and let us know where we can send your t-shirt. We need your size and we need your address. If you want to hit us up individually, you can always find me on Twitter at Kofi Outlaw.
You can hit me up at Matt Aguilar CB.
And I'm at Charlie Ridgely.
That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Thank you guys for riding with us. 40 episodes strong, and here's to 40 more. We'll see you guys next time. We're out.
Deuces.